We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Here's one from Paulie G.
His question is, I feel Chris Tyree is going to have a breakout year because he's working with the receivers and running backs. Do you agree with this?
Chris Tyree will have a breakout year the minute the football coaches at Notre Dame realize what he can bring to the table and allow him to have a breakout year.
That's and accentuate their strengths.
He's got to stay healthy, right? But last year, with a few exceptions, the coaching staff just said, here's what we're doing, and you got to fit into it.
Yep.
And it's not who he is. Cal game, North Carolina game, Clemson game, South Carolina to a degree. They said, okay, we're going to do what you do. We're going to let you do what you do. And he did well. He made plays. And in the South Carolina game, his numbers weren't good, but we said this before, they were so afraid of Chris Tyree.
He was impactful.
And every time he went into motion, they did something to react to it that Notre Dame took advantage of. And so he was still impactful, even though his numbers weren't there. It's like a great basketball player that just constantly draws double teams. So he only finishes with like 12 points, but he had like 13 assists because he just kept, dishing it out to the shooters and they're knocking down wide open jump shots because they're so afraid of him. He may have gone like, 5 of 15 and hit a couple free throws and doesn't look like a normal great night. Didn't get to his 25 points per game, but he impacted the game in a big way because he drew so much attention that he then opened up opportunities for everybody else. And that's kind of what Chris did in the bowl game. If they start using him consistently where he's getting the ball, then what do teams do? Now exactly. What do you do? Yes, I believe it's possible, Paulie. It's just whether or not he's got to stay healthy. Chris got banged up a couple times last couple of years. That's a fact. But if, as long as he's healthy, it's about use him. We never said once last year Chris Tyree needs to be the lead back. What we said was, however, Chris Tyree needs to play and be used the right way and get touches in a lot of different ways. That's what we said.
Yep.
And they didn't do that. And it was a mistake, in my opinion.
Yep. But they have a chance to make up for it.
They do.
So we'll see.
Potentially two more years of that if he's happy and he wants to stay.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Question from Andre Tonsil says, question for Brian, who is the best player we don't know yet?
Who's the, well, it depends. Here's my hope, Andre. My hope is that I can't find an answer because we've done such a job of creating the type of community here, or we've had the type of people that join this community that you know the team, you know the roster, you know what, who the guys are. So if I were to say to you, guy that you don't know of, and I was to name like, you know, Ty Chan at guard or Jason Onye at D tackle, Andre, you'd be like, no, I know that dude. Who else? Chance Tucker Corn. I'm like, no, I know him. Who? I got nothing for you, man. Like a walk-on freshman that no one's ever heard of because you already know this team. So let me take a look at it from a different angle. Let me look at it from this angle, Ryan. There's a couple guys that I think the college football world doesn't really know about yet, and they will this season. Xavier Watts is one for me on defense. I think he's a guy. I'm really got my eye on Jason Onye as being a guy that if he can crack that two deep and force his way into the two deep could really help solidify some things inside with Gabriel Rubio, who's really filling out. Like he's a legit 300-plus pound guy now. On offense, I think Chris Tyree is a good answer, but I feel like he's kind of already a known commodity with people. But Billy Shrouth is a guy for me, and the tight ends. I mean, look, ESPN wrote a replacing Michael Mayer article, and they didn't even talk about Mitchell Evans. They talked more about Jaden Greathouse and Preston Zinter than Mitchell Evans. I think that's going to change this season. I think everybody's going to know who Mitchell Evans is. And Holden Stace, they're going to know both of those guys. But Holden Stace was at least kind of a highly ranked recruit. He's a top 200 guy. Everybody's going to know who Mitchell Evans is. And we don't talk a lot about Mitchell Evans, but we're going to know who Mitchell Evans is by the end of the season. The whole college football world is going to know like, oh, Notre Dame's got another good one coming down the pike. Matter of fact, they got a couple good ones coming down the pike. You know what I mean? So, those would be ones for me that I would look at. I would, Ryan, any that pop in your mind?
Yeah, I have a couple. I'm sorry. That question you just highlighted, I can't believe that's a take.
I can't wait to get to that one.
I can't believe that's a take.
Yeah, we'll get to that one. We'll get to that one, yeah.
Jordan Batelho is one on defense for me. That's a guy. I think that with Fosse out of the room and with him assuming a potential starter role, I think that he has a chance to put up some nice statistics and really get onto that radar. So he's one for sure. Offensively, I mean, Mitchell Evans is a great one. The tight end position was honestly the first one that was on the forefront of my mind. I think Billy Shrouth's a good answer as well. Everybody else is kind of a known commodity. Like, you know the two running backs. You know who Sam Hartman is, obviously. You know, maybe from a national media perspective, maybe Deion Colsey's a guy that might be fit into that conversation. You know, or what'd you say?
Sorry. Nationally, how about Cam?
Cam. Wait, which Cam?
Hart.
Cam Hart?
Ah! Is there another Cam on the team now?
Yeah, that's why I was confused because I was talking about offense. That's why
I know NFL scouts know about Cam, but do you think people at ESPN have spent a lot of time talking about Cam Hart?
Probably.
We never hear him talk about during broadcasts. That's true. I bet you that changes if he stays healthy this season.
Yeah, Cam Hart's a good one. I think you hit Xavier Watts. That's another good one. Defensively, I think there's a lot more easy ones, Brian, because I think offensively, like, you know a lot of those guys, right? Like Cam Hart.
And they were most more highly ranked recruits, Ryan. That's the thing. Like Lorenzo Stouts was a top 100 recruit. Deion was a top 100 recruit. Tobias was a top 100 recruit.
Yeah.
You know, Audric Estime was a top 200 recruit. I mean, these guys were known commodities. Logan Diggs has already broken out. You know, Audric's already broken out. They had the great 1-2 punch in the bowl game. So a lot of those guys, we already know who they are. You know, they were high. It's now it's like, oh, finally, so and so is doing what he was supposed to be doing his whole career.
Yep. Okay. I mean, I hope Nolan Ziegler or Jalen Snead are those guys on defense too, hopefully, but we'll see.
Absolutely. And Josh Burnham. Absolutely.
Yeah. Question from David Prevo. Do you think there will be more of a rotation for some defensive backs this year? There was some due to injury last year, but would love to see guys stay fresh against spread teams or guys are ready.
I don't think the rotation last year had anything to do with injuries. I mean, they played four corners all season.
Yeah.
All season. I mean, they played Cam, actually five, but four definite series. I mean, Jaden Mickey'd play, but he didn't always play. But every game that they were healthy, they played Cam Hart, Benjamin Morrison, Clarence Lewis, and Tariq Bracey every game. So they played four guys. And on safety, they played a four-man rotation all year. So it just who was in that rotation changed when, like, Brandon Joseph got hurt. But they played, I mean, Houston Griffith played a ton last year. DJ Brown played a ton last year. And then finally, eventually, Ramon and Xavier got more snaps. So, I mean, five guys got a lot of snaps at safety last year because of the injury. But they were a four-man rotation. I'll say this, David. Maybe we see a little bit more at certain positions. Like, I think we could see if Chance Tucker can really pop like I hope he can, maybe they can spell Benjamin Morrison for a few series a game, a couple series a game, and take some of that wear and tear off him and keep, like you said, keep him fresh. That's a great idea. But I think that they would ideally like to do that anyway. I think that's the one DB position we didn't see a lot of rotating last year, Ryan, is because there was nobody else who could really play the boundary like Benjamin could. They tried it early in the year, and every time teams would see Benjamin off the field and Clarence Lewis in the boundary, they'd go right at him.
Yep.
And he's just not a boundary corner. So they just did it less and less and less as Benjamin got better and better and better. So, but this year, hopefully they can find someone that can take 10 to 12 snaps off his legs a game. Yep. And so then by the end of the year, you've taken about 100 snaps off of his plate, and he's pretty healthy in late October and November, when you start really getting into some big time money game situations.
I think in safety, it's going to be a little tough right now. I mean, I think that's why we keep talking about like Clarence Lewis or someone like that moving to safety right now, because I mean, right now you have Ramon Henderson, Xavier Watson, and DJ Brown. Like, that's guys that you're really comfortable with. Beside that, you have two freshmen and one in Nadon Schuler isn't able to play in spring either. Right. So that's going to be a little bit of a limited rotation, in my opinion, unless you get a Clarence Lewis transition to safety, or if Ben Minich or Don Schuler take that step up. But it's just, I mean, right now I see three guys that are definitely going to play in safety. I just don't know if there's a fourth, obviously, in that conversation.
Right. It may not. Well, Thomas Harper, I think, you almost might have to be that guy, which I think hurts them at nickel, in my opinion. Now, we'll see. We'll see how it turns out. Here's Brent Smith is back.
Brett says, Ryan and Brian, who are the two starting guards versus Navy? I think for me, I would say Billy Shrout and Andrew Kristofic at the other guard. That would be my two answers for it.
Yep, I'm there. That's where I'm at. I think if I had to pick today, that'd be my two. My sleeper for that would be Michael Carmody, if he can put the weight on. If he can get up to 290 and keep it, he'd be the other one. But at 280, I just don't think he can be that guy.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, man. It's going to be tough. Question from Jeff Fluke. Do you think Lorenzo Styles looking better has anything to do with the trust that the quarterback will make the throw he needs to make compared to last year?
I don't think so, because early in the year when he was having his struggles, he was catching a ball from Tyler and they were roommates and good friends and, you know, supposedly had a rapport, and he caught balls from Tyler as a freshman. I think it was just, I think, I don't know the answer. I wasn't there. I don't know Lorenzo. The way reading it from an outsider, I think he put a lot of pressure on himself.
Yep.
And when things didn't start going well, he pressed number one, and then he allowed the quarterback stuff to become an excuse for him, is what I think. But Lorenzo was in his own head, and I don't think his attitude is where it needed to be. And how do I know that? Okay. When I'm watching a guy in the first two, three games of the year, when he's not the number one read, jogging off the ball, disinterested, that's not a guy that's got in the right headspace. Now, part of that is, well, he knew the ball wasn't coming. All right. That says a lot. That says a lot about you, says more about you than the quarterbacks. And so that's when I knew Lorenzo wasn't in the right headspace. If he gets back to that, and I think the quarterback play can see, here's where the quarterback play can help with that though, Ryan. When you have a guy like Tyler with what Tyler was in the bowl game, or a guy like Sam Hartman for sure, who's proven it at a much greater level. I don't care where you are in the read. If you're on the field, run your freaking route, because I may throw you the ball. Right? So that matters. That matters. And I don't think they always did that in the past. I don't think Ian Book was very good at going past his first couple reads. Drew Pine didn't often have anything past his first two reads.
Right.
And so guys would just know, I'm not getting the ball right here. So I'm just going to jog off the line and not show effort and not occupy the safety because he clearly sees me not trying to run hard.
Yeah.
If he can fix that, Lorenzo could be a – I mean, we don't talk about him as – that's a guy we don't talk enough about because I think we just kind of wrote him off after last year.
Sure.
Lorenzo Styles is still a very talented football player. And if his head's – if he's in the right headspace this year, he could end up being their leading receiver. I mean, it's not out of the question, right? And that's what makes this receiving corps so good.
Lorenzo Styles was on the freaks list last year, Brian. Like, I mean, we forget about that, right? Like, the kid's a very physically gifted player. Yeah. I agree with you, though. I don't think Lorenzo was ready to be that guy last year. I don't think he was ready in his mind. And I just think that he was pressing all year, and then he hit a very low spot mentally during that season. That's what I believe. I think it's very positive, though, so far that you're seeing in spring ball that he looks locked in and he looks a lot more confident. That tells me that there might be some resiliency to that kid, which is a great thing to see. Obviously, have to see it in games.
Planet, Ryan. I'm sorry, buddy. I didn't mean to
interrupt. No, you're fine. I was finishing because I was just going to say it's a great sign. Have to see it on Saturdays, but it's a good sign so far this offseason for sure.
He would not be the first kid on the planet to have a bad – there's a reason the expression sophomore slump is something we hear about.
100%.
You know, because your sophomore slump comes from you did something as a freshman, you're feeling really good about yourself, and for whatever reason, it doesn't happen. And for Lorenzo, it started last spring. You know, it all started last spring. So to see him stepping up and playing well this spring, sure. Yeah. Sure. I mean, yeah, but whether it's Tyler or Sam or whatever, I don't care what the reasons are. Don't care. I just want to get fixed. Because if it gets fixed, Lorenzo is a really – because here's the thing. They have such unique skills. You could start a game with three just physical freak, like size freaks on the field, 6'5", 215, Deion Colsey, 6'4", 205, Tobias Merriweather, and your quote-unquote little guy of Jaden Thomas, who's 6'2", 220. In the slot with 6'6", 250-pound Mitchell Evans, a tight end, or 6'4", 245-pound Holden Stace, a tight end. Okay. All right. What are you going to do? Then the very next series you come out, and you've got freaking Chris Tyree at slot and Lorenzo Styles at the field receiver, and all of a sudden it's like, now what do you do? Now how do you defend this team?
And you can throw Caleb Smith into the boundary. Yeah. Like, it's just, yeah.
Any of the others, I mean, right? But that's the thing, Ryan, is how do you defend that? Like that, honestly, that might be my 12 personnel alignment. Yeah. Instead of going big with 12 personnel, I'm RPOing you to death out of 12 personnel. I'm going to have Lorenzo Styles and Chris Tyree out there, and we're going to motion and bubble screen you and RPO you and now screen you to death. Because if you think that you're going to crowd the box, like it was so funny. We were at the pro day yesterday, and Sam Hartman, like, I think I had him like 21 for 21 when they were out from the field. It's just like throwing these gorgeous deep balls. And Sean looks up. Sean's sitting down. Sean Davis sitting down. I'm looking up. Sean looks at me like this. Please, please put 8 in the box next year. You know what I mean? Just like, I dare you. But that's the whole thing. Like, you can't do that next year. So maybe that's how you mix up your receiver rotation. We go 12 personnel. I'm putting Chris Tyree and Lorenzo Styles in the game. Or Lorenzo and Tobias in the game or whatever. You know, where you're going to get a different skill set. We're going to be physical in the box and fast in the perimeter.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all types of different ways to do it. You just got to get creative with it. But if Lorenzo gets his head on straight and Chris Tyree takes to this receiver thing, and if Tobias is who I think he is, and if Deion can be more consistent, you get my point?
Yeah.
We know what Jaden Thomas and Caleb Smith can do. All of a sudden, how do you defend this team? How do you defend this team?
You know what's the most the spot that is so, like, we're going to talk about this a lot, I'm sure, this offseason, but the spot that is the biggest headache potentially for a defense next year guarding Notre Dame is that one snap, if I'm a slot defender and I have to see Jaden Thomas, and then the next snap I see Lorenzo Styles, the next snap I see Chris Tyree, and then, by the way, Holden Stace might go in there in the slot occasionally. It's like, man. So many different body types and styles on the inside there, especially. Right. It's like, it's a headache, man. That's a headache.
Because if you're going just between 11 and 12, and 11 personnel I'm facing Jaden Thomas, and then 12 personnel I'm facing Holden Stace, it's not that big of a difference.
Sure.
You're going to be running very similar route trees.
Both physically, guys. Yeah.
Same big physical guy. One guy's a little taller, a little longer, and, you know, thicker, but it's the same type of game.
Yep.
Then I come in with this 5'9", 190-pound guy that runs a 4.3. And it's like, I can't play you the same way I did last series.
No, you can't.
You know what I mean? And so now what do I do? And that's – Ryan, you know, you and I agree on this. I know for a fact. I love diversity of skills on offense.
No doubt.
It's like Alabama and that game against Notre Dame was able to kind of be physical on the perimeter with Notre Dame's receivers, and they couldn't do the things they'd done all year, just throwing the one-on-ones to, you know, Javon McKinley and Ben Skoranek. They had, but they had nothing to counter with. Nothing to counter with. If they took that out, well, oh, well, we gave it our best shot. We had a nice run. You know, now it's like, okay, cool. Then we're going to put Lorenzo in there and you motion him a bunch, and now we're going to get you chasing him all day. And then they're going to come back out in the second half after you've been chasing Lorenzo and Chris Tyree for a couple quarters, and then we're going to come back out with Tobias and Deion and Jaden and say, okay, now we've had you chasing around all day and you're tired. Now we're going to just come out and beat you up. It's a great problem to have.
Yes.
That's why I've been – Ryan, this is exactly why I complained for years about they needed to bring in more slot types. But once again, poor recruiting has forced you to move a guy that from another position there to save it like we have with safety. But I don't care. You're there.
Right.
You know? And that's where I want to be. I just – give me different body types, different skill sets. That's what I want to see. That's what I want to see. All right. Here we go.
From Eric O'Brien, he said, his question is, what is the difference between an official visit and unofficials other than paying for travel? Eric, we've talked about this a bunch in the past. So usually official visits are multi-day to start. Yeah, usually unofficials are usually just a one-day kind of off thing. Official visits are usually multi-day stops over a weekend, usually. But the biggest things is that when you're on an unofficial visit, you're touring the campus very generally, right? You're going out and you're seeing all the athletic buildings and stuff that they have there.
It's a football related thing.
Yes.
It's mostly just the stuff related to football.
When you're on an official visit, that's where stuff starts getting real from the academic side. So you're touring the academic facilities. You're going into the classrooms. You're going in to talk to the academic advisors. You're going to go tour the dorms and really see what that's like structurally on the inside and all that type of stuff. So basically, again, just to summarize, unofficial, it's very athletic department driven. It's usually a one day off type of situation. Official visits, you're getting paid for the visit. It's usually multi-days, and you can also get more into the academic side of that visit type of structure and then the dorm stuff. So that's some of the basics.
You are starting to see more and more kids go to two-day and three-day visits on unofficials. Like Logan Thomas is doing that. But a lot of times kids will take these like Midwestern trips where they'll go out for like a week and see like five or six different schools.
Yeah, Midwest swing, baby. Yeah.
Yeah. It just really comes down to the big thing really is, honestly, Eric, the only thing that's fundamentally different is the paying for travel and lodging and all of that is really the primary difference. It really is. And you're limited on how many of those you can have. You only take five.
Five. Yeah.
You can take as many unofficial visits as you want. All right. Here's an interesting one, Ryan. From Ryan Heens, it looks like, I think it's Heens, as I'm going to give that a shot.
Ryan, great first name. Question, why doesn't Mickey just start in the slot and we play Harper as more of a in the box safety?
Talk about Jaden Mickey. It's close to being a great name. It's one letter away. But I don't know if, number one is, we know that Thomas Harper's a really good nickel guy. We've seen him do it. We don't know if Jaden Mickey's that guy. So right. I think number one is, why would you recruit Thomas Harper to move him to a position that he has not excelled in college? That makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that would be you may be forced to do that if something happens somewhere else. But to me, you recruited Thomas Harper. Why? Based on what he did at Oklahoma State. Well, what did he do at Oklahoma State? He was a slot guy.
Nickel. Yeah,
exactly. And you know, he can do it. I don't know that he can be a good safety. I have no clue. So now you have two guys that are in positions they have not proven that they can be effective in. So that's why, to me, I wouldn't do it.
Two unknowns, right. So you're talking about a guy that you haven't seen in that safety role as much, and a guy that you haven't seen in the slot as much on the college level, obviously, either. So
no,
just two unknowns.
I'm not saying I wouldn't let Jade Mickey learn at the slot. I would. But I'm not moving him there and then moving someone else away, assuming it's going to work out.
Right.
You know, I'm not doing that. But yes, I would like to see Jade Mickey get opportunity in the slot, because who's going to start there when Thomas Harper leaves?
That's a great question.
So yeah, work him there, but I'm not working him there and moving someone else away from it, in my opinion. It's just not what I'm going to do.
I agree. We had a super chat from Bayside Tiger 6. Thank you so much for the super chat. Glad to have you guys in on a Saturday and able to join live. Since 2000, which Notre Dame players can you think of with more memorable NFL careers than college? David Givens is one for me.
Luke Pettigrew, to me. Now, I know he's a first-round pick, but he just never seemed like a – like never got him being like a great player in college, but he ended up being a pretty darn good NFL player. Ryan Grant was also a better NFL player than he was.
Much better NFL player, yeah.
Yeah, he definitely was.
Brock Wright? Brock Wright.
But that's more so, yeah, that's correct. But that's more so just because he was buried so much. But that factors into it. I mean, factors into it. I'm trying to think
because Brock Wright had like less than 100 yards receiving in his career at Notre Dame, right? Something like that, yeah. Which is he had like 200 something yards in touchdowns
against Bowling Green in 2019.
Right.
So yeah, but you know now he's like you said, and you watch him like that one. What was that long catch and run he had late in the year? You're like, this dude is moving.
Yeah,
dude ran a 4.59 at his pro day, you know, 4.6 flat at his pro day. So the dude can run. There's no doubt about it.
I think you mentioned one earlier, Brian. I would say Matthias Farley had a better NFL career than college. I mean, he was a good college player, but like he was pretty dang good at safety in the NFL for a couple of years, man.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I'm trying to think of some other guys that would have been in that mold, Ryan.
You don't usually see it, right? Like you don't usually see that type of
thing. No one talked about JJ Jansen when he was at Notre Dame. I don't remember anyone. You guys, what, 20-year NFL veteran now? It's a long snapper.
Something like that.
Right? Yeah. Like it's been around forever. So that's obviously pretty cool. So it's funny. Is like the only thing I remember people saying about J.J. Jansen, well, he's only at Notre Dame because his dad's a big, wealthy donor. And it's like, well, maybe. But all I know is that guy's going to have one of the longest NFL careers of any Notre Dame alum ever. Right. So you can say whatever you want, but that guy has perfected – what he did at Notre Dame at the NFL level. And so I'd say that's an impressive one. I'm trying to think of some others, Ryan. There aren't a whole lot of others. Romeo Okwara. That's another one. Yeah. Romeo had a really nice last year at Notre Dame. The thing that hurt Romeo was he was so young. He was 16 years old as a freshman at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Just nuts. But yeah, he would be one. He'd be another one that I would put in there.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
I can't think of any other ones.
It's a good list.
I remember Jonas Gray had one silly game for the Patriots in the NFL. Just like 200 yards, but then he just didn't show up
late for something, and he got just,
never just saw like, him again.
You had a chance, and then you did something. Oh my gosh,
dude! He looked. I remember I picked him up on fantasy after that week, Brian. I'm like, here we go, Jonas, and then you never heard from him again, man. Never heard from him again.
Yeah, I'm trying. David Givens is a good one. That's definitely really good one. I'm trying to think of some others, but. Yeah, that'd be the primary one. Well, okay, here's one. I mean, I could kind of cheat a little bit, right? And say Dorsey Levins.
Okay.
I mean, he played at Notre Dame, transferred to Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
He was okay at Georgia Tech, but you know, I think he had a pretty memorable Notre Dame or professional career, won a Super Bowl with the Packers.
He was good with the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, his first year at Notre Dame, his 4 years in college, he ran for 132 yards at Notre Dame, 53 yards at Notre Dame, transferred to Georgia Tech, ran for 213 yards at Georgia Tech, set 823 yards in his last year at Georgia Tech, and was a fifth-round draft pick in the NFL and was a starter on the Super Bowl team.
Yep.
You know, so didn't have a long career because then he had some injuries.
Yeah,
but for a couple years there, it's pretty good.
It was good.
You know, had 1,400 yards the year that they won the Super Bowl. Next year only played half the year because of injuries and had 1,000 yards the next year, and then he was just never healthy again after that. But I'd say pretty memorable. Guy started in two Super Bowls and won one of them. It's pretty good, right?
Yes, pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah. Here we go.
Next question is from David Lowe. He said, just curious, is NC State going to be any good next year? Could they that be a trap game? I think it could be. I mean,
David, I don't think it can be a trap game because of where it's being. To me, trap game is very clearly defined as a game that has to be, to me, some level of trap, meaning it's like it's surrounded by something else that can distract you from it.
Because you have one game between that and Ohio State,
yeah, right? Because you play Tennessee State and Central Michigan around NC State.
Good point.
Now, yeah. Could NC State beat Notre Dame? Yes, absolutely they are capable of if Notre Dame doesn't play well. To your point, Ryan, they should be a good football team. They bring in Robert Anai as their offensive coordinator. That should help. Yep. They bringing in Brennan Armstrong should help them because we know he can run Robert Anai's offense. And they are pretty deep a quarterback, to be honest with you. I mean, if all those guys stay – they have some pretty good defense. I mean, lose some good players, but bring back some good players. Yep. Yeah, that's a now. Should Notre Dame beat them? Yes, they should. Yep. But if Notre Dame doesn't play well, can NC State beat them? Absolutely, they can.
Yeah, they still have some dudes on defense, especially man. Like they got a couple guys. Yeah.
I just don't view that as a trap game.
It's fair.
Just because a team can beat you doesn't make it a trap game. The trap game to me is like Duke is a trap game. Why? They play right after they play Ohio State. So Notre Dame's going to be on some sort of emotional feeling no matter what. Either they're going to be off this great high of beating Ohio State or this really rejected, our season might be over like they did this past year against Marshall. That was a different team that played against Marshall than the one against Ohio State.
Right.
And, you know, that's a trap game. NC State's not a trap game to me. If anything, that's the first big game that you're looking forward to. So that's the way I would look at that one. So, yeah, that's why I wouldn't call it a trap game, Ryan. But is NC State going to be good? Yes. Could they beat Notre Dame? Sure, they're capable of it. Yeah. Should they beat Notre Dame? No, they shouldn't beat Notre Dame. But they could. They could. So I'm going to bring up a stat here in a little bit, Ryan, that a question reminded me of that. So let's go to Gavin Harden while I'm looking this up.
His question is, Ryan, is there any buzz around Aldrick Estime or Logan Diggs when it comes to NFL draft circles for next year? Yeah, Gavin, there is. I've actually had agents ask me about both players in the past, and I don't know how much this is disclosing this, but I have had a scout that talked to me a little bit about, you know, just my opinions on Aldrick specifically for next year. So I've had agents ask about both. I've had a scout ask my opinion on one already, and obviously, they were both just sophomores this year, so they weren't draft eligible into the 2024 NFL draft cycle. So, yes, there is some buzz. I'll have more information as far as after the spring when scouts are going through and they do the Blesso NFS reports as far as, like, who they're really looking at and maybe more of an early round projection and just kind of feel that way. But, yes, I've had agents ask me about both, and I have had a scout already ask me about Archer yesterday. So, yes, they do have some buzz.
All right, let's go to this next one here.
Question is from Zaremba R. Brian, the other day when you and Ryan went conference by conference for teams, you would hypothetically root for you. You didn't mention Virginia or Virginia Tech. I know you're a Virginia guy, so any reason for that?
Yeah, so I grew up in Ohio. I was actually born in Ohio and lived there till I was about 15. So my love for Virginia didn't come until I was older. And I do it for fun. You know, it's where my family still lives and all that. But, I mean, I lived in Ohio longer than I lived in Virginia for my life. So that's partly why. And so when I was a kid, I was growing up in Ohio. So when I was a kid and all these feelings that I had, like, you know, when I was outside shooting and pretending I was Adrian Autry or Ramil Robinson, I was in Ohio. I was a kid in Ohio, growing up in Ohio. I wasn't in Virginia. Virginia had some decent basketball teams back then. They had the really good Ralph Sampson team, which was before I was really old enough to really remember. I mean, Ralph Sampson played against the Celtics in, what, the 86 finals, right? I was 8, you know, and I remember those finals. So I remember Ralph Sampson more as an NBA player, just like Hakeem Olajuwon. I remember Hakeem Olajuwon as a great player for the Rockets. I don't remember him with the Houston Cougars. So that's why. And so Virginia didn't really have any guys that were like that for me. I just wasn't really a team that attracted. And Virginia Tech was like nothing when I was a kid. Like nobody knew anything about Virginia Tech when I was a kid. UVA was the only team that really anybody had any feelings for. Now, I did really like Virginia's football team in 88 to 89 to 90 because I was a big fan of Sean Moore as a quarterback. I really enjoy. I hated those white helmets with the blue and orange stripes. It's kind of weird looking. I don't like white helmets without some kind of logo on it. So I hate Penn State uniforms. They're the dullest uniforms, like, just ever. But, you know, it's just my personal opinion. But I just saw it. Just Virginia Tech was never a thing. So when by the time Virginia Tech got good at football, I was a teenager slash adult. You know, it was like,
yeah.
Michael Vick was kind of the breakout. I was already in college when Michael Vick was a freshman. Like, Michael Vick was a year behind me. Him and Ronald Curry were juniors when I was a senior. And I've told this story before, Ryan. I thought I was a really good high school quarterback until I went and watched Ronald Curry play in person. And I was like, yeah, I'm not that good.
He's a freak show, man.
He was
a freak show.
He was.
He didn't play wide receiver in the NFL, man. He would have been better if he didn't get injured. Like, he's
pretty good. If he did not go to North Carolina to play, if he would have gone to a football school, he would have had a much different career. I will take that to my grave, man. There's no doubt. So I wanted to bring something up real quick, Ryan. Here's a very fascinating thing for you to look at, right? So right now, Sam Hartman, coming into the season, has 12,967 career passing yards.
Yep.
So if Sam Hartman goes out there this year and simply so he ranks right now 19th all-time in career passing yards. If he just throws for 3,500 yards, which is just an okay, it's a good season. It's not lights out. It's a good season. It's not that much more than what Jack Cohn threw for, and Jack Cohn missed time at Notre Dame. You know, missed half of a game when he got benched, missed other time with an injury. You know, but Jack Cohn in 2021 threw for 3,150 yards. Ian Book in 2019 threw for 3,040 yards. So let's just do this, actually, Ryan. Let's just say he matches what Jack Cohn did, which I would be disappointed by.
Yeah.
He matches what Jack Cohn did. Let me pull it up here. I just went away from that page here real quick. If he does that, I hate it when you go away from a page. He would then rank all-time in college football as the number four all-time leading passer, number four. If he simply throws 30 touchdowns, just 30, which is, again, not that big of a deal, he would then rank third all-time in college football history. If he throws as many as Jack Cohn threw, which of 25, he would rank third all-time in college football history. So you're going to see Sam Hartman breaking a lot, passing a lot of people on the all-time passer list. He has a chance to end his career as a top five all-time passer in college football history, yards and touchdowns. Now, again, the COVID year helps, but it's going to be a fun year for that kind of stuff, man. Somebody had made a comment about that. Somebody made a comment about Hartman that made me think of that.
Gotcha.
Here's another thing. Anthony Kulik says, I would argue that Harrison Smith's career was better in the NFL than at Notre Dame. I would somewhat agree with that, but I don't think – here's the thing. I think his perception of how good he is better in the NFL. I thought Harrison Smith was an incredibly underrated player for Notre Dame his last 2 years. Man. In 2010 and 2011, Harrison Smith was an excellent player. Notre Dame fan, here's what y'all got to remember about yourselves, and I'm the same way to a degree. But we have two fans in general. We don't forgive and we don't forget. And we watched Harrison Smith stink as basically a rover in that the way that they used it, which was just, it was a linebacker. And he was not a natural player there. And he did not play well. And that's what a lot of Notre Dame fans just always remember about him. And so when he moved to safety in 2010 and 2011, people had already cemented their opinion of him. And they weren't going to change, no matter the fact he had seven interceptions in 2010, including a game-winning interception against USC, three picks against Miami. And so no matter what he did, people just were not going to change their opinion of Harrison Smith. Just weren't going to do it.
I loved Harrison Smith,
man. He was so good in 2010 and 2011.
Yes.
So good. He was an excellent player those 2 years. And so I think he was – I'm not shocked that Harrison Smith's having the career that he had. I think the perception is what changed. I don't think Harrison had necessarily a better career. I mean, Harrison Smith, his last 2 years, in 2010, Ryan, he had 91 tackles, seven interceptions, seven pass breakups, In 2011, he had 90 tackles, no interceptions, but he had three tackles for loss and 10 pass breakups. And part of the reason he didn't have any interceptions in 2011 is nobody threw at him really that much because of how they watched what he did against Utah. I mean, the pick he had against Utah, go back and watch the pick. I was at that game, and he was chasing a drag. And when the ball was thrown, like, here's the receiver coming on the drag, ball's that way. Harrison's over top this way. And as soon as the ball, like, Harrison baited the quarterback. He was in trail position. And as soon as the ball left the quarterback's hands, he went, whoop, stepped right in front and picked it. It was one of the most freaky athletic plays I've ever seen.
Yep.
And, you know, one of his picks, a couple of his picks against Miami were good. The other was just the quarterback just was so awful. But he was a stud at Notre Dame. He was a stud. So once he moved to safety, he was a stud. Yeah. I just don't think the perception was that he wasn't perceived to be a stud at Notre Dame for a number of reasons. Including the fact that he just didn't look good as a linebacker. You know, so I think that's part of it as well. So yeah, that's a good comment. But he has had a very good NFL career. Harrison Smith played like an All-American his last 2 years in Notre Dame. He just got no All-American love at all because perception wasn't there for him. Agreed. And they, yeah. So
how you can have 90 plus tackles and 7 interceptions in a season and not make a All-American list is just beyond.
In fairness, 3 of those picks came in the bowl game against Miami. So the All-American list had already been kind of decided, but still, like 90 tackles and 4 interceptions and 7 pass breakups for a safety is pretty good. 90 tackles and 10 pass breakups like he had in 2011 is pretty flipping good. And 3 tackles for loss. Pretty good.
And he should have had some notoriety following that 2010 season as well, too, right? Where it's like, probably. Because we know a lot of those lists are very reputation-driven. You know what I mean? So,
yep. So, Harrison Smith was a dude. So I'm just going to leave it at that one.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's get to Mark Stewart. Here we go.
Mark's question, how important do you think it is that Notre Dame starts to have high draft picks consistently to help recruiting?
Very important.
Yeah.
Fair. I mean, why does Notre Dame recruit tight end and offensive line the way that they do right now? It's not because they know that Harry Easton's a great coach. How do they know that Harry Easton's a great coach? Because he – puts guys in the NFL on the high level. That's how kids perceive a guy being a great coach. Yep. Right. I mean, fair. I mean, not every coach that produces big time recruits is necessarily a great coach. He just is really good at recruiting really, really good players. And, you know, they have a lot of God given ability, but it's, man, NFL Notre Dame starting tight end has been an NFL draft pick going back to like since 1998, the guy that starts the season as a starter gets drafted when his career's over, going all the way back to, I think Jabari Holloway, the year before Jabari Holloway might have been the last time that was. I think Gary Godsey might have been the last guy that happened with.
I love that left tackle stat at Notre Dame, Brian. It was like since Zach Martin took over as a left tackle for Notre Dame, all the way up until Liam Eichenberg, they were all first-round picks, you know, within that time frame. It was just like, that's pretty good, man. It's not bad, you know.
And that streak is still alive because technically – Blake Fisher started the 2021 season at left tackle.
Well, Liam went in the second round, though, so it ended there.
Well, I thought you said first or second round pick.
Well, I mean, if you stretch it to 2 rounds, then that's definitely intact.
But every single guy, the one you're talking about, the first round picks, yes. Yeah. But that was like, 3 guys?
Yeah, it was Zach and then Ronnie.
Every single one's been a high draft pick. Very high. Liam was like, 42? He was 10 spots out of the first round. First or second round pick, Blake will probably continue that. And then, of course, Joe will continue that. And then, I mean, that's why. And why are they struggling to recruit some other positions? Okay. I mean, when was the last time they put a quarterback in the first round of the NFL draft? Literally, Ryan, you were freshman in high school? 06? 07 draft?
Yeah, 06. I was a freshman. Yep.
So, It's been a minute. Yeah. It's been a minute. Here's a, I'm going to read this, Ryan. Okay. It's a 4-part question from Edward Cheatham. Okay. This reminds me, I had a friend in high school named Cam Watley.
Uh-huh.
And he would always bring up these really ridiculous, would you rather this or this scenario?
Hypotheticals. Yeah.
And it's like, neither, dude. What are you, nuts? But so Edward has a really interesting one that reminds me of that. And so he says, okay, hypothetical for the whole IB staff. And so for today, Ryan, it's going to be me and you.
Okay.
You have 2 head football coach job offers to start a school's program from scratch. Offer one, Stiers University, which is a team full of football geniuses. We're talking nerds of the sport, but they all show a staggering lack of athleticism.
Okay.
Offer 2, D'Addario Tech, which is full of dudes. We're talking athletes, but they're all fencers, swimmers, etc., and have a disturbingly low football acumen. No field awareness whatsoever. You have 2 seasons to win 50% of your games or you're fired. Assuming you can't recruit your way out of either situation, which do you take? So do you take the guys that have the great football minds but can't run, or the guys that can't think their way out of a wet paper bag but can really, really run?
I love the question, Edward. It's very creative. Yes.
Greatest questions we've ever had.
It's an easy one for me. I'm picking the D'Addario Tech because in college football, if you got dudes, man, you can still win some football games. Like, that's just all it comes down to.
The thing that got me on it, Ryan, is you have to win 50% of your games.
Yes.
I can win 50% of my games with a bunch of freaky athletes. Because he put dudes in all caps, right?
Yep.
Now, I'll never win a championship that way.
Yeah.
But here's the reality. If I have a bunch of unathletic, really smart kids, I'm still going to stink. I just am. Because you just are. Now you know who this is. You know who D'Addario Tech was? It was Notre Dame in 2008, 2009. Poorly coached team, not a lot of great football acumen. They were still over 500, a game over 500. Why? Because they had dudes. They could just out athlete certain people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just simple as that. And the reality is if I'm starting from scratch and I've got a bunch of guys that aren't athletic. I mean, imagine if Harvard had to play in the SEC.
Right. Yeah.
And go on 12. Yep. Right. So, I'd go with the D'Addario Tech. That was one of my favorite. I was curious where you were going to go with that. I actually kind of thought you were going to go with the other direction.
Why? Because I wear glasses. Because I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Well, actually,
I against people to wear glasses.
I was trying to pick the other one just because I wanted to pick Stiers instead of D'Addario, but that's a different conversation for a different day.
That's mean. You've kicked Vince enough today.
He's not in the chat anymore, I don't think, so he's good.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's get to some more as we wrap these things up. Here's one from D-Hawk.
D-Hawk's question, do you guys believe Tyler Buchner will be the clear leader for quarterback one in 2024? I think many fans are overlooking his talent just because of what Notre Dame has coming in with Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr.
Yes, I do think he'd be the clear leader in 2024 as of right now. I think it's a 100% guarantee? No, probably not, because those other two good guys are really good. But I think Tyler Buchner is extremely gifted. I do. I just think he missed a lot of very important development time. I was talking with somebody about this earlier today. Somebody texted me when they saw my tweet about how Tyler looked today. I was like, people don't realize how talented Tyler is. He's really talented. Yeah, he had a couple bad games last year, but he's really talented. And he's going to be hard to beat out. He's not going to be easy for Sam Hartman to beat out, but I fully expect him to do it because Sam Hartman's very good. But Tyler Buchner, here's the thing. The only person that's going to stop Tyler from being a really good college quarterback is Tyler. That's it. And I mean that twofold. One is injury, which he can't really control. Or B, he makes decisions that are unwise, doesn't have the right attitude or whatever. And that's true for all kids. Look, man, adversity teaches us so much more than success, in my opinion. I fully believe that.
Yep.
And adversity defines our character so much more than success. It's easy. You ever like see a kid growing up that's just like, you know, playing ball and he's just like footballing everybody else and he just talks a lot of trash and he's and then he plays that one guy that's his size. Yes. And he gets beat and he just handles it awful. Starts throwing the ball, crying. Like, you know, you thought you were hot stuff until, you know, somebody, you know, put you in your place and now you can't handle it. To me, it's I want the guy that's out there on the court and he loses two or three games. He doesn't like it. So he goes home and says, I'm going to work my butt off and may and do whatever I need to do to make sure I never lose again. That's the guy that I want. I don't want the guy that, oh, things didn't work out for me my freshman year, so I'm going to pout and go home and take my ball and go somewhere else to some other coach who's promising me something. All right, cool, man. I wasn't going to win with you anyway. I really wasn't. So if Tyler has the right attitude and can stay healthy, he's got a chance to be a great quarterback in college, in my opinion. He does.
Yep.
I don't know if it'll be 2023, but I definitely will be 2024. And as much as I love Kenny mentioning CJ Carr, I just don't see them beating him out in 24. I just don't. Yep. It'll be tough. But
because Tyler will be hurt, 4 years.
If he gets hurt and has to miss a significant period of time, he won't get his job back.
Sure.
That's the thing. But that's a great place to be as a football program.
Yep.
You know,
I mean, as long as he can stay healthy going into 2024, if he kind of buys into everything, he'll be a fourth year player. He'll be in 2 years under Jared Parker's system. He'll be obviously a second year now going into working with Gino Gadulli as his quarterback coach. A lot of good, obviously, there from a baseline perspective. So it's up to Tyler, man. He's still got a lot in front of him. Like, it's not 2023 or bust for Tyler Bucker. He still has a lot of opportunities in the future. It's just about buying in right now for me.
Yep, absolutely. Just got to be careful you don't get Wally pipped. And that's true. Yes. That's true for a lot of guys. You know, it's true for a lot of guys. All right, here we go, Ryan.
From Andrew Van, is there any chance we see Blake Fisher get work at guard? I still believe he could be an elite guard.
I don't think so. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think so. You know, Tosh would have to be really good to force that move. And I just, yeah, I agree with you, though, Andrew. I agree that he could be an elite guard. I really do. I just don't think that's what he's going to want to do. I don't think Blake is going to want to make that move. I don't think Notre Dame is going to make that. And they're not even willing to move Clarence Lewis to safety. That's the biggest no-brainer position move on the planet. And they're not willing to do that. I don't think they'd be willing to move Blake Fisher away from tackle.
And Blake came in at 310 this spring, right? So, like, obviously he's reshaping his body to be a better offensive tackle, right? Like, that's kind of where we are. Space, so. Yeah. Exactly. So, I think that ship has kind of sailed. I would have loved to see it. I mean, I was on that wavelength last year of like, oh, if Tosh Baker could be a guy and then you move him inside a guard. Like, but at this point, I just think he's going to be the right tackle at Notre Dame this year. And then after that, I wouldn't be shocked if Joe Walt leaves and he stays, if he's the left tackle at Notre Dame. Like, that's just
like
kind of
what he did when Stanley left. And Eichenberg actually did that too, because Liam played a lot of right tackle early in his career, you know. Yep. And Ronnie Stanley did that too. Remember, he started at right tackle in 2013. People forget that Zach Martin and Ronnie Stanley started together for a season. It's wild. So people forget that. Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. Yep. Ronnie Stanley, Mike McGlinchey, and Quentin Nelson were all in the same Notre Dame offensive line in college. It's ridiculous. Here we go. Peter DeGon, 55.
And Peter DeGon says, interested to know what you think about linebacker position this year. I think it'll be Prince Kali, J.D. Bertrand, and Jack Kaiser as the starters.
It's possible. I don't know. I haven't seen Prince take a jump yet, and that's my thing. I just haven't seen him take a jump yet. And he's really a lot shorter and smaller than I anticipated. So
yeah, I think that you have two out of three for me, Peter DeGon. I think that it's going to be, at least to start of the season, I think it's going to be Bertrand, Kaiser, and probably be Maris at will, and then hopefully Nolan kind of unseats him at some point. Like, that's just kind of how I see it. But
yeah, I hope I'd be okay with Kaiser moving to will and Jalen Snead starting at Rover, or Ziegler at will and Kaiser slash Snead at Rover. I'd be very comfortable with that. Last couple questions here, Ryan. Here's one from Mark Avalone.
Mark says, do you think some teams overuse helmets, stickers, a.k.a. Ohio State? Seems like by midseason, half of the team has helmets full.
I'm old school. I love helmet stickers.
I love it too, man.
I think you can't be obnoxious with it. Like, you know, where every little thing, you know, like, oh, you went to class, you get a helmet sticker. No, it's got to be about football achievement. I'm sorry. It does. Yeah. I think also all the stickers should be uniform as well. right? You don't have like eight different stickers. I'm a big fan to me, like with what Florida State used to do with the Tomahawks, with what Ohio State does with the Buckeyes. I love that stuff. I think that's great because that's just kind of how, when I was a kid, that's just what, I mean, that's what football did. You had, I mean, helmet stickers was a big thing when I was growing up. It's not as much anymore. But yeah, I think that's a really cool thing.
My high school team was the Wildcats, Brian. So we used to get the helmet stickers with like the little paws on them. Mm-hmm. I remember we had this one stud defensive end. He was a year older than me. He hated them though. So he would give them away to our one starting corner that was not good at all. And he would just like have so many. It's like everyone thought he was a stud. When the game started, they're like, oh, he's not actually a stud.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
No, he's not.
He's not.
Yeah, I do. Now, here's the only thing I would be my caveat is you have to have some uniformity to how they're applied. Like, I don't want guys like put like a number or a logo, something like using the stickers to create some sort of thing. Like, you know, yeah. fill up the line, you know what I mean? Like, or go across, you know. There's got to be some uniformity. I don't like stickers when like you get those kids that will like make like little symbols out of their stickers. I don't like that. You know, like have some uniformity. Hey, it goes across the bottom and then works its way up, or starts, you know, works from here and works its way back. Whatever. I don't care. But those are, I think that's cool that Ohio State does that. They still do that, right?
Yeah, I think they still do that.
Right? That's what I thought.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I think that's really cool. I think they should definitely.
I'm like getting visions of AJ Hawk. I remember his was all full constantly, man. Like, yeah. He was a good player, man.
Yes, he was. I'm actually going to pull up the bowl game really quick because now that I think about it, I don't remember the Georgia game. I'm trying to go look and see. Look at some things from that game. Yeah, okay, C.J. Stroud, they had helmet stickers. I don't remember C.J. Stroud like having helmet stickers in that game for some crazy reason. So, yeah.
They can't get rid of that, man. That is one of the cool things.
Ohio I could State be completely does. Wrong. It's like I literally don't remember it. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying like I don't remember it. So I'm going to go pull this up here real quick.
Oh, man, we haven't seen Archer all show, Brian. The minute you start talking about Ohio State, he's in the chat.
Oh, he's
now.
In there.
Stop,
oh,
Archer.
He's in there. Yeah, of course he is. As soon as we say something like that, he's all up in there. I'm looking at some other players in that as well, Ryan. And yeah, they had helmet stickers on there. I'm trying to find one with CJ with his helmet on. But there we go. Yeah, he had helmet stickers all over. I guess he had so many on there, it just looked like his helmet was one
color.
Looked
natural. Yeah.
Because he had so many on there. Like, how does a guy that throws as many touchdowns as he have room for all those stickers?
Seriously.
So that's the other thing too, man. But yeah, like that's something Penn State missed out on to me. Penn State helmets would look a lot cooler if they had like little blue, like Nittany Lion logos or paws. But I like the little pins. Cause I think the Penn State logo is really conducive to a sticker.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know, just put them bad boys on there. That'd be really cool. Yeah.
Agree.
That'd be really cool. Yep, that'd be I like those. I think who else does that in college football?
You said Florida State.
Florida State still does it, I believe.
I believe so, yeah.
I'm gonna type let me see this. College football. Who does helmet stickers? Let me see this. College football. Let's see here. Google is a cool thing sometimes. Who does helmet stickers? See if there's still teams that
I can't think of anybody else aside from those teams.
Yeah, so let's see here. Looks like they say Clemson does it.
Clemson does it, really?
Yeah, they do a paw print.
Huh?
Eastern Michigan, Florida International, Florida State, Louisiana Lafayette, Michigan Wolverines. I knew Michigan did. That's right. North Carolina, Northern Illinois, Ohio State, Pitt, Stanford. UNLV and UTEP. I don't remember Stanford guys doing it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting. So, see, I don't even notice it sometimes.
What would Stanford even use?
It was an axe.
An axe. Oh,
okay. An axe blade, which is kind of awful. And if you really think about it, that's kind of morbid.
Yes.
Your mascot's a tree.
Yes.
And your reward stickers
you're gonna chop it down.
Axe blade. What the heck kind of crap is that? You know, like, what are you guys doing here? So, yeah, that's a little weird. A
little bit.
I'm not going to lie to you. That's a little weird. That's really, really weird. But hey,
explains the downfall of Stanford.
Stanford right guys have helmets. I see it now. They have they're Stanford guys with stickers on their helmets. Hmm. Yeah, never noticed that. Notre Dame lost that game because Ed Orgeron was at it. That's why they lost that game. He was at that game. You remember that?
Yeah.
Is he going to be on the staff?
Mm-mm. Is he going to be the defensive line coach? Yeah.
Nope. All right. Last one here, Ryan. I wanted to save the best one for last. Here we go. It's from David Lowe.
David Lowe says, do y'all think ESPN's comparison of Braylon James to Golden Tate is accurate?
So first of all, David, are you still here? Where did they write this?
I need an article link.
Where did they write this? Because I have to know the answer to this question. Because
that might be the worst comparison I've ever seen in my life.
It's in the conversation. It is. It's in the conversation for one of the worst, Ryan. That is.
So we're talking about a 6'3" outside receiver with legit deep speed, little bit of a lanky build, right? Compared it to a inside out physical after the catch 5'11" wide receiver like Golden Tate, who was a running back in high school.
Right.
That's what we're comparing right now. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. That's the dumbest thing I've heard in a long time. But I gotta know where they said that. I have to know where they said that. Cause it's not that I don't believe you, but it's like I just find that shocking.
Oh, I believe him. It's just because it's ESPN. I believe him 100%. But it's bad.
That's just a terrible, terrible. I would really like to know where they wrote that. Really would like to know that.
They don't have the same body type. They're not the same play style. Like, there's just nothing that is reminiscent of one another at all.
I'd really like to know the answer to that because that just seems ridiculously stupid.
Yes.
In my opinion, it really does. Somebody said Georgia does it too. Yeah, Georgia does it. They do those white little bones on there.
So I've got about the bones. Good call.
They do that. That's another good one. Jonathan Fink had that one. Yeah, Georgia. Nice. Georgia does that. That's a good one. That's a really good one. Yeah, that's a terrible comparison.
Awful.
I mean, like you said, 5'10", built like a running back, thick legs.
Yak guy.
Great after the catch.
Yeah.
Could stretch the field. Sure, that's the only thing they have in common. They could stretch the field, but if you want to
they stretch completely differently. Like they're not the same type of stretching.
Okay. Some Ebenezer Gatsby said that ESPN compared him to Will Fuller, not Golden Tate. Now that I could buy. I don't think he's as explosive as Will, but very similar game to Will. You know what I mean? Vertical guy down the field, using your speed over top.
Yep.
That I could do. So Ebenezer, if that was actually what they did, then I could buy that. That's why I said, Ryan, I just have a hard time that they're that stupid.
Yes.
like that's a terrible comparison, Golden Tate. Yeah. Will Fuller, a little different body type. Braylon's a little taller, a lot thicker.
Right.
But style of play-wise, Will Fuller was a downfield vertical weapon that could do some stuff after the catch using his speed, and that's what Braylon was in high school. So that I could buy. Braylon was a little faster than Will coming out of high school, but Will took a big jump when he got to college. If I'll tell you this, if Braylon James makes a similar jump in speed that Will Fuller made, we're going to have a lot of fun.
He's going to be running a 4.2 soon, man.
That's, that's absolutely right. So that's a lot more believable and a lot more fair. That one I could buy, Ryan. That one I could buy. So
A little better. Still not great, but a little better for sure.
What's not? I'm just curious. I'm not arguing. I'm just curious. What's not great about it?
It's just the height attributes, the length attributes. Like I just think that Braylon's going to win down the field a little differently than what Will Fuller was winning. That's just it. Yeah,
possibly slight difference, but it's similar. It's similar. So I think if you're talking Notre Dame players, I think the guy that would probably compare the best body type. He's a little bigger version of Chris Brown, and probably the closest Notre Dame guy to him, in my opinion, because he's a little thicker than Chris was, taller than Chris was, but both raw vertical guys coming out. Will was on a different gear, man. I mean, in college, Will was at a completely, completely different gear than what Braylon played at. Chris Brown is much more similar to what Braylon James could be. A style of play. So I just think Braylon's a little bit more of a natural football player than Chris. Chris was a track guy, but that's what I would say. And I think Braylon's a lot. Here's the big difference. And this is going to matter. Braylon is a lot stronger than Chris Brown was coming out of high school. But game-wise, Ryan, similar way you could use him in a game. Will Fuller just had a different gear, man, than just anybody, in my opinion. But they both, one thing I have in common, they both have inconsistent hands. Like Chris had, or Will had a little inconsistent hands, and Braylon has had a little bit of that at times as well. So just got to get a little bit more comfortable snatching the ball with ease. So yeah, that's a good one. Hey folks, that's going to do it for us today. Hit that like button, everybody. Please do us that favor. Hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell. These things help us out. So why do we ask you to do that? Because those things help. I can't explain to you from the standpoint of how the algorithm works. I just know that the algorithm says that that's the way it works. The more engagement we have, the more likes we have, the more shares we have, the more comments we have. It lets people know this is a channel that people need to watch. And so people that are looking to get Notre Dame content or that way. It's also why we ask you to do 5-star reviews on the podcast, because if we're getting 5-star reviews and the more 5-star reviews we get, the more that people see, hey, this is a channel that needs to be promoted more. And it helps us continue to grow that way. So, you know, people are always say, hey, look, I want to support you financially. Best way to do that, sign up for the message board at boards.irishbreakdown.com. If you want to support us financially, but you're not in a place right now, and I get it, times are tough for some people, and you still want to support us, those are the things you can do. Read all of our articles. So sign up for the mail, the daily. We have a mailer that goes out every day.
A newsletter
that goes out every day. I kept wanting to say Mailer Lite, but that's the name of the thing that I use. So I kept wanting to say we have a Mailer Lite that goes out, but that's the thing that we use. We send a daily newsletter out, gets all of our free content. So read all of our free stories. That helps us make money. Hitting like on the show, sharing the podcast, giving us a 5-star review. Those are all ways you can help Irish Breakdown. If you're a member of our site, Notre Dame fan or not. And hey, look, you can join the message board if you're not a Notre Dame fan, if you're willing to talk ball and not get into, you know, insults and things. If you want to talk ball, come on in. Frank McCatchery, Archer, come on over. Just know that, you know, we're Notre Dame board, so we're going to want to talk about Notre Dame. But, you know, as long as you're there respectful, most 95% of the people will treat you with great respect, just like they do in this chat. So you can come on over too, and we'd love to have you. So those are the different things you can do. So, hey, we're going to be back Monday. Ryan, you and Sean will be back. You guys are going to review this week, all this weekend's visitors. So from now until Monday, Ryan is going to be doing nothing but eating, sleeping, and talking to recruits about how things are going this weekend. And maybe a couple of things. You do have a 1-year-old, so you know you have to do some of that parenting thing. But other than that, he's going to be talking to recruits. So at 2:00 on Monday, Ryan and Sean Davis will get together and talk about this weekend's recruiting opportunities. We just got a text from Sean about Justin Scott, so we'll read that here when the show is over. And so they'll be back on Monday. Then, of course, Ryan will be back on Tuesday. So y'all have a phenomenal rest of your week. I hope to see you guys on the message boards talking about the practice report that's up today and some of the other stuff that we'll have up there. Thanks, everybody. Have an awesome day, and we'll talk to you again soon on the Irish Breakdown Podcast. We'll be right back.